Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning. Time is still flying, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right.
So, how was your week? And before we get into the lesson, what's on your mind?
We are all calling in from different locations. I spent last week visiting with John and some of our clients in the Charlotte office, and Dimitri is should be dialing in. He's attended an industry conference in Austin, so he's coming back today.
Awesome. So how was your trip to Charlotte?
It was great. There are clients that I had been working with for a few years that I had not gotten a chance to meet in person, so I delivered the folders and then explained what we're going to be doing, so they were really appreciative, and I got to meet with some of the clients John's been working with, who I'll let, you know, John kind of tell you a little bit about that, but I think it went well.
Yeah, we had at least, two of the clients that wanted to meet Stephanie over the last year, and we finally kind of put it together. One ended up in a car accident. We ended up doing it by phone anyway, but the other one, Sue Litauer, came in. Wanted to accomplish one of our team criteria was meet the rest of the team, so to speak. So and it gave Stephanie and I a chance to see how she worked on the client with the Supernova concept, and then gave Stephanie a chance to see how I was responding to the client. And we shared different strategies a little bit on how to work the meeting with the client, the review. I thought that was real critical, and I came away with a bunch of things that I now will incorporate with all my clients that I meet with for reviews. So.
That's great. It's just that, you know, different techniques, different styles, and what anything in particular that you came away with that would be interesting to share?
I would say it was pretty similar to how the other meetings have been going. So I think it was good that we were.
Everybody loves the Bitty Me folders, and really, obviously, it was a good, great tool to use in the review, and it creates excitement to follow up with the next call and or review, too. So it's very positive.
Are you guys having trouble or problems in terms of the agendas and the executive summaries? How are you handling that?
The agenda in advance, I would say we're still getting Sarah acclimated with doing reminders a week ahead of time. So I would say our agendas are not being sent a week in advance, but the executive summaries, the follow-up, at least the notes, we're being pretty proactive in providing to the clients and highlighting the action items on top of them.
Great. How are you finding it in terms of workload versus benefits?
I would say the overall workload is high, but I think we touched on that in previous calls, that there's a lot of things that we are putting together now. Eventually, we won't have to do them again. So that's not going to always be the case, and we've been proactively making those calls to reassign clients, the uncomfortable calls, since our last call.
How'd that go?
It was fine. They're not all completed yet. Some of it was logistical with joint production numbers through the retirement program, but overall, it was very easy, quick phone calls to make.
Great. Are there enough of them that it will cause, that it will save you some actual time?
I think a lot of those people are not necessarily taking up a lot of our time right now. but it's mental space that we won't have to attribute any longer to that many individuals. So it's probably more of a feeling more organized rather than actual workload that they were causing.
Yeah, and then just what we find is just a couple times a year, though, that's all it takes, you know.
Sure. There was one of the clients that we're working on reassigning reached out last minute saying that they needed their wire done. Our assistant spent more than a day trying to get it done all on this one client who does pay us revenue, but they don't meet our minimums. But she, an entire day of hers was gone trying to get it completed.
Yeah. And that's you know, when they ask for the 12 monthly statements and all this stuff, you know, you don't notice it sometimes. You don't, but the team does, you know. So that's part of what we do to make it efficient for the whole team, not just us.
Sure.
Easy for us to keep the clients. But ask the team and they say, you know what, we have too many clients.
Yep.
And that makes Then they get it. Then they understand, okay, so I have to do a little more work in terms of agendas and executive summaries, but we have fewer clients, so, okay, I can see it now. I get the balance. If you don't do the reassignments, then it just seems for the team, for the staff, that it's just more work. So that's the part where we hide the clients, put them in the ceiling and the rafters and the closets, and they still call in. And that's when, you know, it's not quite fair.
Yeah.
It doesn't meet the smell test of Supernova. You may be doing it, but you're, you know, that little bit of cheating, it costs the team in morale as well as, real time. So thank you and congratulations. By actually doing this the right way, you'll reap the benefits and you'll never miss them. Never.
Mm-hmm. I think we're definitely on board for it, and I wish we were done with it, but we're trying to get there as soon as possible.
So, John, you probably don't have many clients to reassign, or do you?
Well, I went ahead. I reassigned about 31 accounts that were smaller accounts because I want to get to keep somewhere between 80 and 100 clients, I guess. And then as I bring new clients in, either keep them or drop one off from the bottom.
Good.
So, and I had clients basically that still were probably under 100,000 that I had to get rid of one way or the other because I wasn't making any revenue on them anyway.
It's great. And it's just it's around to it. You know, you could do it sometime, but the problem is we never get around to it. And so
I had a couple clients that Stephanie and I know about. One was actually a lady. She was a Morgan Stanley attorney. She just retired. I had about $1.8 million of her money, but probably 90% of it she would never invest. And I was on the verge of trying to get her into CDs, and we had a good relationship. But she just called and said, "Well, I don't want to keep my money at Morgan Stanley anymore. I'm retiring. Nothing against you. I just want a local advisor here in New Jersey, and I don't want to be with Morgan Stanley," which I thought was interesting. But
isn't it? That's really interesting. After spending a career with Morgan Stanley?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of sad, isn't it, huh?
But, you know, I was only making about $300 a year on her from what she had, the CDs or whatever we had invested in her in, but she just wouldn't move on most of her money. But
isn't that a good story to remind yourself?
Yeah.
That when, you know, let's have our minimums, and our minimums are a lot more than just assets, right?
Yeah.
I mean, our minimums are production. Our minimums are You know, I like to used to say, you know, I like them, they like me, I listen to them, they listen to me. And they have the ability to do it. And they respect what I do. And there was a case of, you know, just really amazingly little respect.
Yeah.
Or appreciation of what you were doing and offering. And therefore, it just wasn't a good fit, and it wasn't going to be a good fit. And that could have been done probably years ago and saved you a lot of time. But
yep.
Thank you for sharing that, because most of us don't share those stories. Those are, you know, it's always the one that turns into a lottery or something.
Yeah.
But that's the majority of those people. I like to think, you know, it's a $5 million account that never gives you a dime of business. And that has no value to us. You know,
yep.
It may appear good, but it, and so you feel so much better when you do that and clean your business out and then build the business that you've always dreamed of and then keep it that way.
I learned from Lee Chimarakis, who's retired, but Lee really helped me over the last year, I guess, trying to focus on trying to create revenue from clients. And Stephanie and I have been back and forth on this a little bit too. I guess a lot of them in trying to push clients into doing more transactional or even put them in active management, like portfolio management situations. They kind of either push back or they don't listen, or they just, like a Karen Rosansky, she is. I guess. But yeah, it's something that I know we're talking about transactions. I think about it a lot, and I'm trying to move more and more of my clients into transactional situations each month. With opportunities for them besides managed accounts.
I mean, it's look, the when you do proper planning and then execute on the planning, there's, you know, that it becomes, and the size of the client grows. There's more things that need to be done, and they need your expertise more, and that's really what we're here for. We're not here, you know, to invest $500,000 rollover. I mean, that's fine, but it's not what you really get paid for. You get paid for your consulting and your ability to, you know, it's like for me, the more complex, the larger your business is, the more interesting it is to me. Okay, we're getting some feedback right now.
Sorry, that's probably me. I've been listening, but I'm at the airport and there was some talking on the speaker.
Okay, great. Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
Any comments for your week, Dimitri? You just checked in, right?
Yeah. Noteworthy. Well, last week I was trying to work on kind of being more concise in the delivery of my, you know, the messaging of my script. Because after the discussion about, you know, what, you know, the Bob Lamina, the prospect that we had, I wanted to rethink and just, and be more concise in my delivery and, you know, help know my audience better. So I reworked that, and then my goal last week was to have some conversations with folks that, you know, we are letting go. And, you know, because there are a group of folks who we've reassigned, but we didn't have a conversation with them because, you know, we didn't really have any personal relationships with them. And then there was like the second iteration, the second group was folks that we needed to have a conversation with. So, I had a conversation with a few that I was able to get in touch with, and Went better than I expected. One was with this Julie Gervanix, who is, she was a broker of the day call. She's a nice lady. You know, I felt like it was an easy one to kind of practice on, because, you know, her account was so small. We were waiting on more money to come in, with her, but it just hasn't happened yet. And, you know, I used the script that was in, in the packet and kind of massaged it a little bit, and it went really well. And then I had another call with, this Jonathan Graver, who was referred to us through, our cleaning lady. It was our cleaning lady's boyfriend, but he's been kind of difficult. So I think for me, it was some progress being made there, because, it was kind of conversations that I've been dreading to make, and, you know, got over that first hump.
Great.
Yeah. But,
it's never quite as bad as you think it's going to be, you know.
Well, yeah, I know. The other situations are, there's one that I'm really dreading to make, because the client, she's been a difficult client, and she hasn't been particularly, you know, happy. You know, she was unhappy when the market was up and there was volatility, and then we put her into something more conservative, and then she's unhappy because she's not participating in, you know, the up market, but it's a much more conservative, that's what she asked for, you know, and she's just more trouble than it's worth. And I'm not looking forward to that conversation, because it's, you know, I don't know if it needs to be the conversation of, you know, hey, we're looking to, you know, we're going through these changes and, you know, we want to find somebody who's a, you know, better fit, and, you know, making our practice smaller and that thing. 'Cause I think it would kind of be a slap in the face, because she's already unhappy as it is. So thinking that it might be a better conversation to just say, hey, listen, like, we're interested, you know, we want to give you the choice to either, you know, find your own, or you can be reassigned to somebody else, and then tell the, you know, frame it kind of that way, as opposed to, you know, we're doing your, you know, we're helping you out, and we don't have time for you, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, some people are never, you know, they really don't know what they need, and they're never going to be quite happy. They're always thinking of something that is going to make them unhappy. So my guess is this will not make her happy either. So the best thing to do is to just do it.
Mm-hmm.
Just get it over with. I mean, don't, 'cause it, what happens is it sticks in your head and stays with you.
Mm-hmm.
Because your mind can only hold one thought at a time. And any space that takes eats you up, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
and the more I think, and the more, you know, the more I, you know, don't move forward with it, the more I think about it, the more it just festers and festers and festers, and it doesn't come out, you know, the quality of the deliverable doesn't really come out all that great when you sit around it that long.
Right.
So, you know.
Yeah, the message is basically, you know, it's not, we love you and we want to keep you. We think you're best suited for somebody else. And that's just never going to be a great message. So you just have to deliver it. But the best thing to do is to actually have somebody for her and be excited about the person you're going to reassign her to.
Uh-huh.
That's the best way to do it. Think about it when, I always tell people, when you're going to buy a new, you know, you're going to sell a stock. I never sell a stock. I always am buying another stock. Okay? Or I'm raising cash. I mean, you always talk about the thing you're going to, not the thing you're coming from. Okay, so focus on the place you're going. So if you're going to buy, you know, if you want to sell a position, say you want to sell IBM because it's just nearly underperformed, right? Then either you're raising cash and talk about how valuable the cash is going to be, or you're buying a new company, you know, you're buying Microsoft. And you're really excited about Microsoft. So you talk about Microsoft, and then the question is, where's the money going to come from? Well, I think it should come from IBM because it's really underperformed and probably will continue to underperform. Then it's like, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
In this case, talk about the person that you're going to reassign them to and how great he is or her, and what a better situation it's going to be for you. And then the fact that you're letting them go isn't as big a deal.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. And make it as short as you can. Go, you know, the longer, the more words you use, the harder the pain.
Mm-hmm.
So fewer words, script it out, say it a few times, get on the phone, and tell her the story.
Mm-hmm.
And then listen, and then tell her the story again. And then listen, and then tell her the story again. And then be done with it.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you can even have a phone call associated with your call, meaning, you know, John is waiting for your phone call. If you'd like, I can conference him in right now and introduce you.
Mm-hmm.
Or John is going to call you right after this call.
Right.
Then she's concentrating on John and the phone call, not on you. You're over.
Yeah.
You're done.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah. So
that makes it better. Okay, let's spend some time on acquisition, because this is big acquisition, so we only have a few weeks here where we have to teach everything there is to know about acquisition, and then you try it, and then we spend the next 9 months, you know, honing your skills in the areas of acquisition. So, did anybody get a chance to work on centers of influence last week?
Yeah, I set up, I have a center of influence meeting set up next week, and then I have another one. That one was with a trust and estate attorney, and then I have another one with a divorce attorney next week as well.
How did it go, and what's the next step?
Well, just setting up the meeting, we're just working on schedules, but
okay.
The reason why I like, so this divorce attorney is, it's a relatively new relationship, and how he came about was I met him through the Honda Classic, but we also have a mutual client who is a recent divorcee. She's a sweet lady, you know, but he likes the work that we've done for her, and he's interested in, I guess they do a lot of, like when they go to the stand and, you know, they represent some, you know, some ladies in court, they'll do like a full financial plan to try to quantify the amount that they need after the divorce takes place. So he's interested in having us be the ones to produce the financial plans for their clients that they would present, present in court. So, you know, I'm kind of interested to see if how that opportunity plays out, and, you know, because it would be an introduction and it would be a full financial plan, like, right off the bat. And then depending on, you know, whether those things settle, we could potentially, you know, if they're attractive, you know, we could bring on, you know, some new clients there. But I don't know, you know, I'm interested in hearing them out and helping them, you know, explain to them our new process. I'm going to bring them over and then talk to them about, like, our minimums and our target, because the conversations I've had with them to this point, I haven't had the opportunity to tell that story yet.
How much are you going to charge for the financial plan?
See, that's... I wasn't planning to charge anything.
That's a mistake.
Okay.
He charges his client. He's willing to pay you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And if you have no... If you charge nothing, you have no value then in the mind of the client, of the lawyer.
Okay.
Plus, you're gonna go down some holes here. You know, there are gonna be some black holes, and you don't want to go down those holes without getting paid.
Right. Okay. Well, what would you suggest as a starting number?
$2,500 to $5,000.
Okay. And I mean, is that? Go ahead.
Sorry, I'm not sure we can bill them without having a CFP on our team. And Natasha, I think, is on mute, but she may be able to address that.
Wow. Okay, you need to get that resolved. You really need, in this case, this guy's looking for a way to do it faster and cheaper than he can do it. And I mean, that's a nice opportunity.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you could do probably, you know, 5 to 10 of those a year with him, make some money and build a nice relationship.
Yeah.
So I think that's a great opportunity. And
I wasn't really sure on how to handle that, because I liked the fact that he was giving us a look and trying to integrate us to the practice, because it's just, you know, they do a lot of business, and they're a well-respected law firm in the area. So I thought, you know, okay, well, we'll offer the service, do the plans. But I'm glad that you're telling us to, if we have the ability to bill for it, then we should. Because then, you know, in some cases, it might just be a waste of time.
Right. And probably 80% of the cases, it'll be a waste of time. But, you know, for the 20%, it's worth it. But if he doesn't, see, lawyers are billable hours. They understand that. They understand billable hours. They respect that. And mm-hmm. he'll turn around and just, you'll charge him and he'll charge her. So it's, you know, it's just business. It's much more efficient for you to do it. Plus you have credibility and he has none when it comes to financial mm-hmm. planning.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a nice opportunity.
All right. I'm looking forward to the meeting, because he's a really nice guy too, and you get along.
Yeah,
he's a younger guy, and he has a good temperament, which I like. So.
And you can ask him. You know, ask him. You know what makes sense from your point of view.
Uh huh.
In terms of fees, you know what can you guys, you know, what do you think is fair? What we usually charge is $5,000, but we could, you know, we could do something, you know, $2,500 to $5,000, or, you know, if it's a complicated case, maybe we have to go to 10, but it's not going to be $25,000, which is what some people charge.
Right.
So I think that's a good conversation. He'll understand. I mean, he gets it. He's a businessman. So good case. It's a nice center of influence. Family attorneys are really good, and they need us, and we uh-huh. need them. You know, it's a great, great, great situation.
Yeah, because there's money in motion too. You know, they're going through life changing events, and a lot of them,
right.
you know, need our help.
Right. Well, wonderful. Good. Anybody else with centers of influence this week? Okay. The centers of influence, as we talked about, is the beginning of the, is the key element of kind of everything else that we do when it comes to niches, mastermind groups. They all kind of grow from the centers of influence. So niches, inside each niche that we have, let's say it's a company or it's a group of attorneys like this, a law firm, maybe we specialize in family law. It becomes our niche. And inside each law firm, you need a center of influence who will then refer you to the other attorneys in the practice. And he's kind of your advocate.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to nurture him and then see if you can meet his partners. So that is typically the way we call that a nest or a niche.
Mm-hmm.
Inside a law firm, it'd probably be a niche, would be a nest, you know, inside where all the same, like bees in a nest. In a niche would be family attorneys, where you have four or five family attorneys, and they all speak the same language, and you become the expert in family law. And that's great. Once you get a couple of good centers of influence, and we're talking professional centers of influence now, you can refer to them and they can refer to you. That's the definition of a professional center of influence, somebody you can refer to, as well as they can refer to you. So let's say a professor at a university might be a center of influence. He's not a professional center of influence because you can't really refer to him. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So once you have several of these folks and you really, you know, like you said, I really like this guy. He's young, aggressive. He's the perfect person to start a mastermind group with.
Mm-hmm.
And the mastermind group would be people similar to yourself in age and experience, but they're up and comers, real aggressive, real smart, and they want to grow. All right?
Mm-hmm.
So like Stephanie's mastermind group would be more senior, you know,
mm-hmm.
in terms of experience, senior partners in law firms, senior partners in CPA firms, and so forth. And yours would be they happen to be the more junior partners, but they're more aggressive and they're more interested in meeting and growing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you have two different mastermind groups within the same community, just made up of different people. And inside that mastermind group, there might be a commercial realtor, a residential realtor, family law practice, maybe a trial attorney,
accountant,
yep, CPA. You could have a business broker. So they could all be terrific. You meet once a month, spend a couple hours together. Some people spend a half a day together, but you become very good friends over the years and refer a lot of business back and forth.
Right.
So I've written quite a bit on mastermind groups, and they work really well. They take some time to form, and you should take your time in forming them. Don't just build one. Now, I had one person build one like in a weekend, and it's amazing. And she did okay because she kind of did a sundown provision where it said, you know, after, you know, 4 months, we're going to disband it. So we'll try it for 4 months and then disband it. If we like it, we'll start it up again. If not, we each go in our happy ways. So she was kind of different. Some people are very careful about how they do it and very slow. Other people are pretty quick. But I like the sundown provision where you say, let's do this for a year. You know, we'll meet once a month. That way everybody kind of doesn't feel like they're locked in forever.
Right.
Then after a year, you meet, you talk about it and say, you know, does this make sense or not? And do we have the right people or do we want to disband it and start up a new one? So that I like in terms of sort of having a terminal state to it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like any networking. It's just a little more formal networking. Now, I had somebody just start one. And they said, so what do we do? You know, what do we do at each meeting? I said, well, the tradition on these is to have everybody brings a good idea and everybody brings a problem. And then you spend the majority of the time with one person kind of in the hot seat where they talk about their practice and bring up issues and challenges and ask for advice.
I'm assuming that, you know, if you're the one that's, or if I'm the one that's organizing this, that
yep.
You know, you're going to, like, I'm the one that's going to be responsible for tasking these people to, you know, bring a new idea and a challenge, you know, every
right.
time, just in, like, put together the group email. So you're the kind of the leader of the group.
Yep, that's right. Yeah. And you're in charge of the calendar. You're in charge of the reminders. People will do something as long as they don't have to be in charge.
Right.
Because they're busy. So you say, no, I'll take care of everything. I'll get the place. You know, I'll make sure that, you know, I'll send out the reminders. And you just bring your good idea, your challenge, and when it's your turn, just be prepared to talk about your practice. Some people do it in the location of the person that's in the hot seat. So the CPA would do it in his conference room and talk about his practice there. You know, and they just provide coffee or whatever. A lot of people
right.
like to do dinner because then it's uninterrupted, away from the office. It's 2 hours. And some people do a breakfast, but they do it for like 3 hours in the morning. So it depends on, you know, there's a group called YPO, Young Presidents Organization. And it's kind of, it's sort of a formal mastermind group where presidents of young presidents, I think they have to be under 40, meet and they give up a whole day, I think.
Yeah.
And they become very good friends, and it's a big deal. They visit, they go to Washington, they go to different places. So it becomes a big social event for them. That's a little more extravagant, but it's kind of the idea.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Stephanie, have you ever tried something like this?
It wasn't a mastermind group per se. It was sort of like a B&I, just titled something differently, where we had, you know, one professional from different potentially referable industries. And that was something I attended. I think it was either every week. I think it was weekly, but it was, you know, early in the morning before work began, and it was a referral group that was successful. And I've done separate, just one-on-one center of influence type meetings, but I've never really picked my own group in the past. I eventually left that networking group when I was kind of looking at the amount of commitments I have in terms of boards and meetings versus what business I had sourced from those places, and decided that the size of the business I was getting from that group wasn't really fitting my target client, so I decided to drop it. But it was a good building block for being able to stand up and give your elevator pitch and discuss topics each week.
Yeah, I think it wasn't something I did, but from studying, particularly women, this seems to be really work for women. And all women organizations like this seem to do really well. And they become friends. I think it's that ability to network and become friends with each other. And I think the key is, at this stage for you guys, and the reason I want you to form your own is because I want you to make it clear what your minimums are. And I think everybody in the group should have similar minimums, or they shouldn't be part of the group.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's the part that you guys have got to, you got the advantage of forming something like this. You can build it so that everybody in the group is of the same level in terms of
mm-hmm.
of success and interest. But I think that, you know, if you think about doing it for 20 or 30 years, and those people move up in their firms and become senior partners and so forth, it can be worth it. Bill Cates, the referral coach, he's in three different mastermind groups, and they all sort of form, they all serve different purposes for him. But I think, Stephanie, if, you know, in the end, if you're on boards, which is another one of our strategies, those can be mastermind groups of a different ilk and can work just as well. So, you know, they're sort of niches by their nature. People are all interested. You usually do have a CPA because, you know, somebody's going to be in charge of the investment process or the finance committee and so forth. So you have business leaders, and oftentimes they're not all referable. I mean, they're referable, but you can't really refer to them because they might be president of a corporation. Okay. But so they all work in different ways. This is just one that I think is kind of unique, and the people that do it seem to really value it. Now, the more interesting the people are, and the more you'd like to spend time personally with them, I think the more attractive is this idea. So I think, you know, when you said, you know, I really like this guy, I mean, I think that's the key.
Mm-hmm.
That you really, you know, because like with Stephanie's thing, after a while it gets old, especially if there's no real personal connection there. You wouldn't go to breakfast with these people unless it was business. It's probably not a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So if you can get past the, you know, to the point where you really enjoy the people because they have great minds, and are really smart and creative and thoughtful, and then it becomes, you know, an opportunity to make great friends and use the mm-hmm. business to do that. And then, of course, the business will come. So I think that's probably one of the breakthrough thoughts in terms of mastermind groups. It's a different than just a networking group. It's a group of friends.
I'm definitely open to it. I've just found, when you mentioned doing maybe an all-women's group, I've been trying to think of women I know personally that would be dealing with that size of a client, and a lot of the women I do know, I don't think are working in that space. So that's been a little bit of a challenge, but I'm certainly open to finding the right ones. I can think of some men, but I don't know that many women.
And I only say the women because it tends, I think it's a, you know, it's a friendship thing. And I think that you know, women like to have women friends, and but if they don't meet your minimums, then forget about it. You know, just have a group that of respected people. You know, I think that that would be great. I think that would work. Okay, and then this concept of niche mastermind group is really one that was sort of a breakthrough idea that we came up with, where we focus in on, the example that I used was a gentleman that was going to his CPA and asking him to join his mastermind group, and the guy said, "No, I'm already in one, but would you like to join ours?" And he explained what they did. They said they're a mastermind group designed to help doctors sell their practices. And they had a commercial realtor to help him sell his building. They had a lawyer to draw up the papers. They had a business valuation person. They had somebody to help them sell their business to hospitals, a business broker. So they had everything. And they needed a financial guy, because the average sale was $5 million. And so he joined and couldn't wait to tell me about it. And, it was just like a miracle that he dropped into it. But it was, so that became, I said, that's a niche mastermind group. You know, that's a niche. The niche was doctors selling their businesses. And all the people associated with it kind of surrounded that doctor and served that doctor.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a little different from just forming a mastermind group. Okay? So you could theoretically do that with any business. Okay? So any, you know, like you take a corporation, all the people that serve that corporation, their attorney, their lawyer, you know, people that sell them products and services, etc. You could form a very valuable mastermind group around people that serve one corporation, or you could pick any industry, like car dealers, the people that do the financing for the car dealerships, people that sell them products and services, their lawyer, their CPA, their attorney, and so forth. So think about that. When you think about your niche, think about forming a mastermind group around the niche. And just like that, doctors that are selling their businesses, there are literally, you know, tens and twenties and maybe even hundreds of ideas that you could come up with to serve a market. So you first have to figure out what your ideal market is, where the people inside the market are all qualified. They'd all be qualified clients. And then you form mastermind groups around those qualified niches.
Mm-hmm.
So that's your homework. Think about that and what would make a good niche in your market. And then who are the people that serve them? And then it's a matter of just listing them and then starting to make phone calls and see if you can make it and build it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'd be, if I were in business today, this would be my number one idea. And I would use it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'd kill it with that idea.
All right.
All right, so that's your homework. Niche.
All right.
Niche mastermind groups. Identifying the niches where you could build a mastermind group, and then who are the people around that niche that you would invite.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Okay.
All right.
So maybe the team, I would suggest the team do some brainstorming on that. So have another call just on that subject, and everybody do some thinking, do some homework, and then have a conference call together and do some brainstorming together, and then And then when we talk, you'll have some real substance to share with me, and that's when I can be a most help. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Sounds
great.
Good.
Great. All right. Thanks, guys. Talk to you soon.
All right. Yeah.
Bye. Thank you.